You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.
I've got no regrets. I wouldn't change a single day.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters, and welcome to the Father's Quilt. I'm your host, Christina Doyle. Well, guess what? This first time in a long, long time, I'm going to address angels and the supernatural. So hang on to your hats, tell your friends, come and join us, come and listen to RadioMaria.ca and turn into the Father's Quilt every Tuesday and Friday afternoon. For the next little while, we're going to be discussing angels and the supernatural. In Hebrews chapter 13, do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some people have entertained angels without knowing it. Do you believe in angels, brothers and sisters? Is that something that you're interested in? Have you ever wondered about that? Well, we're going to be talking about all kinds of things, including purgatory, some nasty angels and good angels, and how we can best communicate with angels, and all of that, all of those questions that are in our minds. So I thought I would, hopefully you'll enjoy this broadcast and the next few broadcasts regarding angels and the supernatural. So we're going to learn about supernatural realities in the light of truth, as revealed to us by Christ and His Church. It's Sunday. Let's imagine, okay? It's Sunday, and the parish priest has just finished his homily. He steps away from the lectern and takes his place in front of the celebrant's chair, and you, along with the rest of the congregation, we all rise to recite the Nicene Creed. There is banging and thudding of kneelers, right? Shuffling of feet and scattered coughing. And Father says, I believe, and everyone joins him, in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, out of all things, visible and invisible. Well, stop right there. You have just affirmed personal belief in created things that are not observable to the human eye. Things most of us have never encountered or experienced, and most likely never will in this earthly life. It is easy to overlook the deeper meaning behind these words of the creed. Many of us recite them without giving intense thought to what they contain. We simply accept them as true, and then direct our attention to the next part of the Holy Mass. But we need to ask ourselves, why is this belief in the invisible so essential to our Catholic faith that we profess it in the Creed? It's important because the supernatural is a real part of our world. It's no less real just because it's invisible. The Creed reminds us that both the material and spiritual exist together as God's creation. And since these invisible things, which we affirm by faith, are indeed a real part of our world, and as we'll see, something that angels and the supernatural, we ought to have an understanding of them. So that's why we're going to be focusing on this mysterious article of the Creed, the invisible, which we are bound by faith to acknowledge. So what is then the supernatural. When we speak about invisible realities, we don't usually refer to them as the invisible. Instead, the words most commonly used are supernatural or occasionally paranormal. And since there are varying opinions as to what is meant by the supernatural, we will begin by defining the terms. Supernatural originates in the Latin root words super, which means above, beyond, in addition, and natura, which is also derived from natus, to be born, and refers to the material world. And then there is the preternatural. The Latin word praeter translates as beyond. So preternatural means beyond nature. Theoretically speaking, the word supernatural refers mostly properly to God, who is above all created things, while the word preternatural refers most properly to angelic characteristics that are above the nature of fallen man. And so for the purpose of all of these next few broadcasts, we're going to allow the word supernatural to also connote preternatural realities, as it does in everyday usage, so that we can address the church's teachings on angels, demons, and disembodied souls. In short, the supernatural refers to realities that do not belong to man or the material world by nature. These realities include active living beings that we can't naturally see, we can't hear or touch. Yes, supernatural beings exist as human beings. We experience everything in this life through a physical body. This makes the very concept of a bodiless creature seem either quite fascinating, irrelevant, or preposterous. Interestingly enough, most of us are quite comfortable with the idea of God being a pure spirit. It seems fitting for an all-knowing, all-powerful deity to be mysterious, elusive, and invisible. But the idea of fellow creatures existing without bodies, without physical senses, without fluctuating human emotions, is disconcerting for most people. Yet it really shouldn't be. If we really think about it, we ourselves are a composite of body and spirit, right? The human person, created in the image of God, is a being at once corporal and spiritual. The unity of soul and body is so profound that one has to consider the soul to be the form of the body, spirit, and matter. And that's taken from the Catechism, Article 362. Man is unique in that it straddles two domains, the material and the spiritual. These realities are united in us through the mysterious and beautiful creativity of God. We are unique among God's creatures, and this uniqueness gives us a particular dignity to mankind. But we're not alone among God's creatures. We're not even first. He created immaterial, invisible beings before us. How do we know that they exist? These invisible beings have been revealed themselves to certain men and women throughout the course of history. But their witness alone is not the foundation for our belief. We believe in spiritual beings who, like ourselves, have been created by God because He has revealed their existence to us. How has He revealed them? Primarily through sacred scripture and church teaching, which tells us that the realm of creation is made up of three categories. Catholic tradition has identified three great divisions of creation, all directed to the Most Holy Trinity. The world of purely material creation, including the animal kingdom. The world of man, defined as beings of both matter and spirit, body and soul, and the world of the angels, who are spiritual persons of intellect, memory, and will like ourselves, but have no material nature. So, The beings in this invisible realm, both good and bad, are not able to manifest themselves to us unless God permits them to do so. They may be superior to us in nature and abilities, but they are still mere creatures who are subject to the will of their Creator, as we are. In all cases, experiences of the supernatural can work for good, for our good, even if they involve brushes with the devil, so as long as we keep our focus on God and lead good lives. As St. Paul wrote, "We know that all things work together for good for those who love God," Romans 8:28. Correcting our perspective on the supernatural. As we begin this broadcast on supernatural realities, there's something we must be careful to avoid. We must not approach this subject with vain curiosity or superstitious fear. As with all aspects of God's creation, we should approach these realities with great humility and respect. Doing otherwise has a harmful effect on our spiritual lives. If the idea of the supernatural continues to feel like an object of curiosity, remember that the church itself, as a divine institution, is supernatural. We encounter supernatural realities in the sacraments. That is, we receive supernatural life through them. The more we increase in faith, friends, in hope and in charity, the more our souls are going to be filled with supernatural life, which is what we need to enter heaven. So we shouldn't think of the supernatural as being foreign to us. Knowing all this, how can we make sure that our personal attitude towards invisible beings is solidly informed by our Catholic faith? So we're going to examine that as well, my friends. So are you glued to your seats? Hang on to your hat. So this is a good time to, quickly text your friends and tell them to listen, because I think you will truly enjoy this. So let's begin. First, let's begin to talk about the reality of purgatory and how we can assist the faithful departed in their sufferings, and how these realities can inform us of our understanding of ghosts. So now we've talked about the beginnings of the supernatural, right? So we might miss a beautiful opportunity when we indulge in this kind in a fear of the invisible world. Why? Let's think about the cemetery. Because cemeteries are a visual call to prayer, they remind us of the souls who have gone before us, men and women who don't want to be forgotten any more than we do. Now, if the persons whose mortal remains are buried in the nearby cemetery are in heaven, they are not in need of prayer and sacrifice. If they are in hell, they are beyond such help. But if they are not in heaven or hell, we have a duty and the ability to offer them and offer them aid. And that brings us to the subject of purgatory. The Catechism provides a very simple definition of purgatory, and you'll find it on Article 1030 and 1031. All who die in God's grace and friendship, but still imperfectly purified, are indeed assured of their eternal salvation. But after death, they undergo purification so as to achieve the holiness necessary to enter the joy of heaven. The Church gives the name purgatory to this final purification of the elect. According to the writings and visions of countless saints and theologians, most people who die in a state of grace are not yet fully purified. Their souls are not ready to see God face to face. or to embrace perfect union with Him. Saint Teresa of Avila, who saw an astonishing number of visions of deceased souls, said, "Among all souls I have seen, there are only three who totally escaped purgatory." It seems then that most people who die in a state of grace do not go directly to heaven, but rather undergo a period of purification that accords with the precise state of their souls. The pain of these souls, which is usually described as a cleansing fire, seem to have one source. The souls encounter by a particular PhD writer, Gerard Van den Aardwijk. The soul's encounter with God right after death has wounded it with an intense pining for Him, whom it has for a fleeting moment recognized as the ultimate fulfillment of all its longings, wishes, and hopes, of its craving for happiness. Having seen Him, the torment of being far from Him surpasses any feeling of being banished from the beloved things one knew on earth. The souls in purgatory, my friends, are called holy because they can sin no more and are guaranteed to enter heaven eventually. They are called poor because they cannot help themselves in their current state and can do nothing to lessen its pain or duration. Instead, they are dependent on the prayers of others to relieve their suffering and hasten their purification. The invisibility of the spiritual realm can make it seem as though there were a clear divide between it and our everyday life, or what we call reality. We forget that our five senses are designed to apprehend material things. We do not naturally have the faculties to apprehend spiritual realities, when according to God's will, spiritual beings such as angels appear. They must take on an appearance that is perceivable to our sense of sight. In a similar way, the souls of the deceased have been permitted to appear to mankind. Such apparitions have been recorded for thousands of years. It is a mystery why God allows certain souls to seek spiritual aid, and why some people among the living, though very few, are able to communicate with them. We must trust His provident will. Such visitations are very rare, but follow a pattern. For example, these souls usually seek out saintly men and women whose holiness can benefit them spiritually. When the soul's purification is complete, or when their helper has given all the assistance that they are able, the visits cease. The poor souls, despite being separated from their bodies, display recognizable characteristics of the face and body that they animated during earthly life, and with which they will be united on the day of general judgment. There are other kinds of apparitions as well. It seems that departed souls can appear in certain places without the intention of visiting someone. Saint Thomas Aquinas was able to infer, through the study of trustworthy apparitions, that some poor souls undergo their purification here on earth. This may account, some writers say, for the recurrent apparitions of departed persons or on certain fixed places, such as where they lived or the site of their sins. And that brings us to the question of ghosts. Are there such things as ghosts? Most people by now will have a question hovering in their minds. Does this mean that there really are ghosts? Are documented ghost sightings actually apparitions of souls in purgatory? Well, the word ghost has so many connotations that we really need to strip it down to its original meaning before we can answer the question. It comes from an old English word, geist, G-E-I-S-T, which means spirit. Ghosts, properly understood, are disembodied souls. And disembodied souls belong to human beings who have died, since death results when the soul separates from the body. The Catholic Church has not offered an official teaching on the subject of ghosts, although her theologians have discussed the matter for centuries. St. Thomas Aquinas had this to say: according to the disposition of divine providence, separated souls sometimes come forth from their abode and appear to men. It's also credible that this may also occur sometimes to the souls of the damned, and that for man's instruction and intimidation, they be permitted to appear to the living. So, yeah, it seems what people call ghosts are departed souls. So not every claim of ghostly activity is genuine. Most paranormal reports can be attributed to natural causes. Okay? There are recorded accounts of purgatory apparitions. The relationship between poor souls and the devout persons they visit is a beautiful example of the communion of saints in action. It affirms the unexpected ways in way the way God works. We're going to focus on one example, Eugenie von der Leyen, 1867 to 1921. I'm sorry, 1929. She was a holy woman chosen by God to be a source of grace for those in purgatory. She had many encounters with the faithful departed, all of whom were in varying stages of purification. Her interaction with them was generally kept secret. Eugenie was emotionally stable, cheerful, and a realistic woman. Everyone liked her, especially the children. Her family was of high German nobility, and by order of her confessor, she kept a sober and matter-of-fact diary of her contacts with the poor souls, which after her death was handed over to Eugenio Pacelli, the later Pope Pius XII. So, as it seems to be common with such apparitions, souls that appeared to her were not clearly visible at first. But as prayers and sacrifices were offered and their purification advanced, the features of their faces became more recognizable. So there is an example from her diary, but I don't know. We really don't need to get into that. But her diary shows how exhausting the work of mercy is, right? Because Eugenie was a courageous woman, she also received visits from souls who died in so bad a spiritual state that they required intense purification. And their appearance was so disturbing and unattractive that they could have been mistaken for damned souls. And her diary entries show how exhausting this work of mercy can be, and that the more she gave herself to the poor souls, the more there were who desperately clung to her and pressed her to give everything she had. If we realize that God is behind all apparitions of souls, the conclusion must be that He is so eager to release the suffering souls that He allowed them nearly to force her, almost to consume her powers in their service. But from her diary, it also transpires that she herself became more holy, more purified, selfless. In the process, God's grace is multifunctional, right? So, how can we, brothers and sisters, and this goes for so many of us, how can we help offer spiritual aid through the mercy of God? How can we help our poor souls? So now that we understand the suffering of the poor souls, what can we do to help them? Doing so is a great act of charity. It benefits our own souls as well. In the Catechism 958, it says, "Our prayer for them is capable not only of helping them, but also of making their intercession for us effective. So here are some ways that we can offer spiritual aid through the mercy of God. Okay, and those of you, we all have many who we've lost, who are no longer on this earth with us. Number one, arrange to have a mass said for the holy souls. Requests from souls in purgatory have affirmed that the mass is the most powerful prayer that can be offered on their behalf. Number two, pray for the holy souls. When someone dies, we should not assume that they are in heaven, even if they were a very good person. We should commence praying for them immediately. Pray the rosary, especially. We are told that invoking Our Lady's intercession under her title of the Immaculate Conception can lead to a particular outpouring of grace for the poor souls. Number three, offer sacrifices, alms, and mortifications. Even the smallest hidden sacrifice benefits them immediately, according to the testimony of a soul in purgatory. And number four, offer your ordinary daily work for the poor souls. Unite your activities with the Sacred Heart of Jesus, which has been taught to be important and wonderful for the holy souls. Do your work cheerfully and well. Okay? So, brothers and sisters, how are you hanging in there with me? Are you hanging in there? I hope you are. Well, now we have, I hope, a better understanding of purgatory and how we can help our loved ones for their purification. So now, as time allows, we're going to go into who are the angels. Who are the angels? So I have, oh my goodness, I'd say I have, how much time have I had? I don't think I have a lot. I have exactly 2 minutes. Oh my goodness. Well, rather than start that, brothers and sisters, I hope that we come together each week, and we're, you know, of course, I'm twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday afternoon, but I hope that these broadcasts encourage you. So the next broadcast, we're going to be looking at a basic understanding of the mysterious beings known as angels, right? Our final destiny as sons and daughters of God is bound up with that of the angels. Our world is full of their presence and their activity. And that is why we ought to know some foundational truths about them. When we speak of the holy angels, it is important to understand that they do not form a separate universe, but rather an integral part of our own universe. Their existence and their purpose are linked to our own. The more we learn about the angels, however, the more mysterious they will seem. This makes sense when we remember that they are what? Right, they are the messengers and representatives of a God who dwells in light inaccessible. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Although we will never fully comprehend them in this life, the teaching provided by the Church, sacred scripture, and the encounters of the saints has given us a lot to contemplate. And with that, brothers and sisters, I bid you a beautiful, wonderful week. And see you next time as we talk about the supernatural and angels. God bless. Bye for now.
I've got no regrets. I wouldn't change a single day. a single